This is Captain John Sheridan. We are here on the authority of a multiplanetary force that can no longer stand by and watch one of their greatest allies falling into darkness and despair. We are here on behalf of the thousands of civilians murdered under orders from the current administration who have no one else to speak for them. And on behalf of the Earth Force units that have joined us to oppose the tyranny that has darkened Earth ever since President Santiago was assassinated 3 years ago. We are here to place President Clark under arrest, to disband Night Watch, and return our government to the hands of her people. We know that many in the government have wanted to act, but have been intimidated by threats of retaliation against your families, your friends. You are not alone anymore. We call upon you to rise up and do what's right. We have drawn their forces away from Earth and disabled them. The time to act is now. This is not the voice of treason. These are your sons, your daughters, whose loyalties have never wavered, whose beliefs in this alliance has forced us to take extraordinary means for justice, for peace, for the future. We have come home.
Here it comes.
The final battle for the liberation of planet Earth is on.
Missiles impacting on all sides.
Give me ramming speed.
On an all-new Battlebot 5.
Hello. I want to welcome back our viewers. We've been gone a long time.
You have transmissions holding.
Batch incoming signal. Full audio and video decode.
Purple files accessed.
What you are about to see has never been shown to anyone outside the Drake House.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Gray 17, a Babylon 5 podcast, where we are here this week to discuss Endgame. For those of you who may be wondering where Scott is this week, after last week's discussion, there may have been an unfortunate accident that Jesse was most assuredly nowhere near. And I'm in no way under duress in saying that Jesse has a rock-solid alibi for Scott's current whereabouts.
But Jesse, you should be fine this week based on what happened. We'll get to that in a minute. So, hi, I'm not dead, even though Jesse thought about it. Welcome to our probably a fairly big episode for our discussion of Endgame. We've been working towards this episode literally since season one. You didn't know we were working towards this episode, but basically since we started hearing about Santiago back in season one, it was all coming down to this Endgame. So we are looking forward to having that conversation, and probably some of you are new to us because we always get some new folks when we have these kind of episodes, so welcome. How this is going to work is we have a group of newbies with us who have not watched anything past this episode, and we also have a group of first ones who have watched every episode. We'll spend the first part of this show talking to our newbies and everyone giving their first impressions, as well as talking the episode to death. We'll then have our newbies give us any lingering questions they may have, and then also predict what they think may happen next in the last few episodes of season four into season five. And then we'll jettison the newbies out the airlock and have our Beyond the Rim segment, which we will talk spoilers and everything that's going to come after this. So I'm Scott, and with me is
Emily,
Blake,
Justin,
Nicole,
Mike,
Kevin,
and Jesse.
Fucking Jesse.
Fucking Jesse.
Before we get started, a reminder to check out our social media links. They are all listed down below. Since we're getting close to the end of season four, I am running our normal bracket, so you can help us vote for the top episode of season four. I just finished up the play-in round, and there was some interesting decisions made in that. So we're now into the first round, and you can find that on our Twitter account. Along with that, you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. If you're listening to the podcast audio, check us out on YouTube. If you're listening, if you're watching or listening on YouTube, check us out on the podcast. All links are there as well. And in a few weeks, actually 3 weeks from now, we will be having our live season four recap on YouTube. So make sure you click that subscribe button, but also that notify bell icon. So when we do go live, you can join the conversation with us as we discuss season four. Also, please, please, please leave a review for us either on Spotify, Audible, or Apple. Apple being the one that helps us out the most. We got another review on Apple, a 5-star from Talon1177 from the United States, and it goes, "Love it. I've been a Babylon 5 fan for years. I just recently found this podcast through a group on Facebook. I'm currently up to season 3, episode Messages from Earth, and thoroughly enjoying it. I've been binge listening to these episodes whenever I got a chance. You guys are awesome, and I enjoy every second of the show. It's really interesting listening to the newbies and hearing things they caught that I have never caught. I really enjoy the humor you guys bring to it as well." So thank you, Talon1177. We really appreciate it. Again, you can leave those reviews on Apple, Spotify, or Audible as well, too. So please, please do that. We'll go ahead and dive into the episode, and I believe Kevin has a synopsis for us.
The battle for Earth concludes as Sheridan leads his forces to Earth to confront Clark's forces in an all-out battle. Meanwhile, Marcus learns of the alien healing device Franklin used on Garibaldi when he was critically injured. But to save a person's life, someone else must die.
Dun, dun, dun!
I was just going to do that.
Let's go ahead and hear from our newbies first. And I want to go to this one because she was adamant that if someone died this week, she would quit the show. Well, somebody may have died, but it wasn't the person that she was thinking. So, Jesse, first impressions on Endgame.
Well, not sitting Shiva, so you're all alive. You're all welcome. And I'm still here.
We're alive for now, right?
I mean, you guys are making a lot of assumptions at this point.
Yeah, but you're right. She's not dead. He's not dead yet. He's not dead
yet. Not quite dead yet.
Not dead.
He's only mostly dead.
She looked like shit too in this episode. Like, they did a very good job with her makeup. When I tell you that I've never cared less about a space battle in my life today, I just was like, come on, bruh. Hurry it up. Like, you either win or you don't. Let's get back to Ivanova. Like, I just need to know what's happening. And of course, they made us wait the entire episode. The whole thing with Marcus was a bit strange to me. It was hard for me to think that a ranger would just leave the battle in the middle to go and save his beloved Ivanova. But I mean, listen, it's TV. We all need something exciting. So I don't know quite how I feel. I'm not sure I was ready to give up Marcus to save Ivanova. So while I'm happy that one's alive, I'm kind of upset the other one. And I guess we'll see what happens.
The moral of the story is you just cannot win with Jesse.
You really can't. Like, you never, 20 years, Scott, I'm sure that this is not the first time you've come.
I was going to say, I've known this for a while. How are you just figuring this out?
Oh, no. Right. I'm just telling the audience what we already knew.
Let me introduce you to Jesse, people, in one word.
Strategery. Nicole, first impressions.
Well, hot damn. This was an episode. It was huge. I was on the edge of my seat throughout the entire thing. I really liked it. Again, new to the genre, so I haven't really seen a big space battle besides what we've seen so far on B5. And this was kind of a bigger magnitude than the previous ones we've seen. So that was cool. I liked how even when they were going in for the kill, essentially, they weren't going in to kill and destroy. They were just trying to disable. They weren't being ruthless. I mean, they would shoot to kill if they had to, but they didn't want to, essentially. They weren't being careless. They were very well thought out and strategic on the way that they were doing the attack. Sneaky with the telepaths, that was cool as hell. I really enjoyed watching Lita just be a boss throughout this episode. At the beginning when, you know, they were loading stuff up and she told that girl, it's gonna work, and like, basically shut that girl down who was being doubtful. I enjoyed a scruffy Sheridan, by the way, totally unrelated to anything, but I liked the scruff. He looked pretty hot, so I gotta say that was good. But yeah, obviously, you know me, I'm a sucker for love, so the whole Marcus Ivanova thing was very sweet. But also, with Jesse, I don't really know how I feel about that, because he is a Ranger, and I was like, there is no way he's gonna leave. And he straight up, when he called for the shuttle, I thought it was gonna be for him, but it was for Lanier so he could take the White Star. And I was like, oh, I did not see that coming. So very surprised that he left, but I guess love will make you do crazy things. So I don't know. But yeah, so I thought that was pretty insane. And obviously the sentiment is sweet. He finally told her how he feels, just a little too late, I guess. But yeah, like Jesse, it's like, I don't want Ivanova to die, but I also don't want to lose Marcus either. Like, I'm kind of heartbroken either way. So I'm interested to see what's going to happen next. But overall, I totally saw it coming with Clark blowing his brains out. What a little bitch.
Justin.
Yeah, I had to sit there and watch throughout this entire episode wondering if Benioff and Weiss wrote this, because I felt like I was watching a fucking Game of Thrones episode, man. Major characters be dropping left and right. Holy shit. Honestly, it's the war is over, and I wasn't expecting that to kind of end this soon, but as a major fan of space battles and all that stuff, this might honestly go down as one of my favorite episodes of the entire series. And I know I've said that more than once, but certain episodes come up that kind of cap others, and this one is definitely within the top two or three for me, if not the best episode of the series so far. You know, it's finally Clark gets what's coming to him. Marcus's sacrifice, you know, sacrificing himself for Ivanova was definitely heartbreaking and touching. But man, it's one of those that will go down for me as, if I have to pinpoint an episode that is going to tell people what I think about this entire series, it might actually be this one.
Emily.
Yeah.
Don't you fucking dare.
Okay. Well, I missed recording last week, so I have a question. Did anyone else watch that episode and go into this one? Like, is this actually happening, or is this a Psycore mindfuck?
Trust issues.
Because we never saw Sheridan actually escape. Like, it looked like they were going to, and then boom, he's on the ship, and there was like a whole missing section.
Well, if you would have brought that up last week when you were in shitty Florida, hi, Florida fans, I would actually say that JMS was asked that question back in the 90s, and somebody actually said on the Usenets, it seems like there was a scene missing where Sheridan goes from one to the other. And he actually said, yeah, we cut it for time. So there was a scene, a transitional scene.
Because I watched the episode twice. I was like, okay, did I totally space out and miss like a 5-minute scene? Apparently I did not, because it didn't exist. Great. No, this was actually a pretty good episode. It was still difficult to watch it and not feel like this is just some Psycore mind fuck, because some of the shit was just weird. Like, I don't feel like the guy who was his teacher should have been like, oh, we're cool now. Dude, you were just talking about murdering him. Are we flipping that quick, or were you just being sketchy and trying to act tough earlier? I don't know. This episode was at least interesting. It had things happening, so there is that. But I didn't hate it, so we're good.
Excellent. Let's go over to our first ones who have watched every single episode at least 20 or 30,000 times. Mike, first impressions.
I don't know if I can fall into that category. Yeah, this is some of the best sci-fi I've seen since Zack Snyder's Rebel Moon.
Womp, womp, womp.
I actually thought it was okay. Anyway, no, this episode...
Which one, Rebel Moon or this?
Yeah, Rebel Moon. I'll watch part two. This episode is really good. It's not one of my favorites. I'm a huge space battle fan, and so, like, I mean, it's all cool and fun and everything, but like, I actually really appreciate about JMS's, you know, writing and style and cleverness, like the more intricate plot lines. Like, you know, Gethsemane, I haven't even had a drink tonight. Passing through Gethsemane, I still can't fucking say it. Anyway, you know what I mean. You know what I mean, listeners. It's still my favorite episode of, I think, the series. But this one is really good. It's very, it's solid. It's fun. It's action-packed. It's got the kind of unveiling of Sheridan's master plan, and it's satisfying to watch the whole thing start to finish. So unlike Rebel Moon.
Well, you're just waiting for the rated R cut. That's the key.
I'm not going to watch it again.
If I said what I feel about Zack Snyder, we'd be here for a while and we'd lose some fans or maybe gain some fans. It depends.
I don't even know who the hell that is.
He's the guy who fucked up the DC universe.
Oh, okay.
Hey guys, how do you feel about Twilight?
Yeah, Twilight.
Vampires don't fucking sparkle.
And many of them don't fucking act well either. Although I will say Twilight Sparkle Batman was okay in Batman.
He was good. He surprised me, honestly.
I'm just tired of having dark and brooding Batman, but he did fine. Okay.
The only vampire movie I want to watch is What We Do in the Shadows.
Nice.
Kevin, what would you like to talk about tonight?
Well, I would like to talk more about What We Do in the Shadows, but since we're not going to go down that rabbit hole, let's talk about Babylon. This episode is fantastic. It's really one of the best ones of this series, and certainly of the season. The sentimental elements of this, with the unrequited love between Ivanova and Marcus, are really something. The battle scene's fantastic. This one's directed by one of their producers, John Copeland, and this was his directorial debut. And he is really good at doing action editing, and JMS does the more dramatic type editing. And so they work well as a team. JMS suggested that he direct this episode, and so he did, and I think he did a great job with it. I like the actor that plays General Lefcourt, J. Patrick McCormick. I did think it was a weird turn, but at the same time, when you've been following a guy who all of a sudden turns his guns on the entire planet and is ready to destroy at least 40% of the population, you tend to change quickly, I would think.
Blake.
I'm also a big fan of this episode. It's probably one of my favorites in the series. And I like the space battles in it. I really like the way they do it. You know, they disable the fleet at Mars and skip past that and go straight to Earth. And I love when they jump out at Earth, that speech that Sheridan gives when they arrive at Earth with, these are your sons and daughters. We've never been disloyal. And that whole speech when they jump in, I'm a big fan of that part. And the pacing, I think the pacing works. I think it really lends itself to the speed up of the season, because this is really the fourth act in a story. If you were thinking of this as a solid story, this is the fourth act where things really speed up. So for me, the pacing works with it. I do kind of agree, though, with Marcus stealing the White Star. I get that they had to do it plot-wise. I can see where some people would think that, you know, as a ranger, why would he do this? But he's not thinking as a ranger at this point. He's thinking with, you know, another part of his anatomy, apparently, that he wants to go save the love of his wife, or love of his life. And all I have to say on that, though, is God damn it, Lanier, he could have left one fucking word out.
Yeah.
All he just didn't have to say usable. He just had to say, nope, there's nothing. He didn't have to say, oh, there's nothing usable. Leave the usable part out. Jesus.
Yeah. I think this episode's great. I think the pacing is wonderful. This is one of those episodes where I really don't understand how it's only 43 minutes long, because there's so much in it and it's done really well to where it doesn't feel like it's dragging at all. I don't understand at all where you guys are coming from with Marcus, and I don't understand where you guys are coming from with the battle itself. So we'll talk about it. But I don't get it. So that'll be interesting. The one thing I did do is I went out to Twitter and I asked folks what they would say their one word responses to this episode. And here are some of the responses I got. I got belter, gut-wrenching, scorched, awesomeness, boffed, and the one that was most interesting to me, and we'll talk about it a little later, war crime. So, should be a good conversation. Let's go ahead and dive into the episode itself. And as much as it was packed into this episode, there really is only one major plot line, and that is the end game battle. So let's talk about that, and then we'll talk about Ivana von Marcus at the tail end of that. So Nicole, go for it.
I just want to also reiterate what Blake said about Sheridan's speech. I wrote that down, that that was very moving and very just shows Sheridan's character very much. Like it was a big moment for him, and it was really good. And it showed us who Sheridan was, regardless of all the stuff that's happened, all the changes, all the things he's gone through. It really brought out his character that we've seen previously, and showed what a good dynamic leader he was. So I really enjoyed that. And as far as the battle goes, again, like I said, new to sci-fi, never seen a space battle. This is all new to me, but I thought it was pretty badass. I mean, the graphics were great. Like everything was awesome. I thought it was ironic that the guy who was leading the Earth front was Sheridan's teacher, and with his whole speech about how he's gonna have to kill him and it's a sad day and stuff, you know, you could tell he was conflicted about it, and he didn't necessarily want to, but also he is a soldier and he's gonna follow his orders, you know. And I think, you know, just from watching everything kind of unfold, and when he was giving his speech about how it's time to rise up, it's time to stand up, you're not alone, it made me think of the Hunger Games. I know, not Babylon 5, but it made me think of the rebellion and the things that were happening in that, because in the first movie, you see the main character kind of stands up to the man, and then that district that she was helping, they started rebelling, and it was just like the seed that they needed to kind of push it along. So it made me think of that, because that's something I am familiar with. I've read all those books, watched all those movies. So I was trying to equate it to something that I had familiarity and subject matter expertise on. I wasn't shocked that Clark killed himself, because like I said, he's a little bitch. What I was shocked was, however, was that he turned all the missiles onto Earth and basically it was like, scorched Earth. If I'm going out, you're all going out too. Booyah, you know? And when they went in to disable all those missiles and stop that from happening, and there was the one left and Sheridan was getting ready to ram it, he was getting ready to make the ultimate sacrifice to save the Eastern Seaboard, essentially, right? When the ship was coming in to take it out, I thought it was going to be one of the alien ships. I did not expect it to be his teacher on the Apollo. So that was like, for me, a little twisty turn, which again, maybe I'm naive, but I didn't see that coming. I think when Clark basically said, fuck you to everybody, all the people that were fighting were like, well, what the hell are we fighting for? You know what I mean? And maybe that was kind of the kick in the pants that they needed to realize that they were in the wrong. So I don't know if it was a little bit of that, and also the fact that he cared about Sheridan, that he came in to kind of not let him die, essentially. So maybe it was a little bit of both. I don't know. But I just thought that was a cool kind of scene. And I could see how, you know, the transition is made to kind of like his side, I guess. Just again, like my observation. But yeah, overall, the whole battle was awesome.
Blake, I think you wanted to chime in on the graphics real quick.
Yeah, I think Nicole just raised an interesting comment with the graphics and commenting on how good the space battle worked and how good that looked. If we go back to when this podcast first started, one of the big things some of our newbies got in on was how dated the graphics looked early on with The Gathering and even in season one. And I think now that we're at the end of season four and we're seeing just how much the graphics advanced over these four seasons. And again, just to touch on, this was one of the first shows, especially in sci-fi, not to use physical modeling, that actually used, I believe it was Foundation Imaging who did most of the work on this. For those of you who are Star Trek Deep Space Nine fans, Foundation Imaging is who did most of the Dominion War graphics for Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So really the groundwork that would go into a lot of revolutionary work that Foundation did started here, and I think we've been able to see the evolution of how much better it's gotten over the seasons.
Yeah, and a little bit more background on that too. So one of the questions was about Mars and how Mars kind of looked a little different than what we may have seen in previous episodes. So another thing that's happened internally is as they've gotten better at the graphics, they've been able to take on more and do more internally. So usually when we had Mars show up before, they actually contracted out to an outside vendor. This is the first time that the internal guys decided to play with it. And JMS had some notes where they could have improved, but it definitely helped them to continue to kind of learn their craft and get better at it. So they're well ahead of the game for sure. Emily.
So Nicole talked about Clark killing himself, which wasn't a surprise at all because he doesn't want to be held responsible or accountable for anything he did, because what he did was just downright terrible. And honestly, I'm not surprised he was going scorched earth, because he definitely seemed like if he couldn't have it, no one else was going to have it. So just torch everything. And it could also take out some additional incriminating evidence. I mean, no, it doesn't matter because he's dead, but he does seem like a petty little bitch. So I can't say I found that part that surprising. But yeah, the graphics were, they were good. Like, they were so much better compared to how this entire series started. And it was, I was actually pretty impressed with how well they've held up. I mean, it's not like this show came out last year. So that they still hold up that well is really nice to see.
Kevin.
So when they filmed the Apollo and Agamemnon scenes, they did so on the same set. And so they really took it to a new level, because they had floor coming up and they really took it to a completely new level that they had not done before. They're having to go back and forth. So they did that by changing some lighting. They did some different camera shots. They changed a couple of small, you know, set pieces just to make it look different. But it was quite an undertaking that they did with that. And I thought that looked extremely good, too. The amount to which the Agamemnon was, in particular, was mucked up by the end of the episode was quite severe. It was very cool.
So Nicole brought up one of the things where I just don't get, and you elaborated a little bit more, so I'm a little bit more behind you now, but I think what we saw there with the captain of the Apollo is, or general, he was the general on the Apollo, is exactly what would happen in a civil war, where some military officials believe that the oath they took means that they work for who's ever in charge of the government at one time or another. They're not going to be involved in a coup. They're not going to be the ones who turn on anybody, because they took an oath to follow the commander in chief, whether that commander in chief is Clark or somebody else. So the way I read the Apollo thing is, as soon as Clark checked out and they were informed by the senator that Clark is no longer in command, well, then his orders changed. So it wasn't a matter, in my opinion, of the general changing his mind. It wasn't a matter of the general seeing that he was wrong. I don't think the general thought that he was wrong, because in his mind, I am following orders. And whether those orders are good or bad, it's not my decision to decide. My job is to follow orders. When you see that dynamic of both sides of a civil war, and I really do appreciate that JMS has gone on his way a couple times to show that there are two sides to this. And it's not a matter of, you know, if you're with Clark, you're a fascist. It's, we're having to deal with some really dynamic situations here. So that's where I see the general come into. And then Nicole, hi.
Hey, I had a question then. Question, not being a smartass. So if his orders changed, then who is he getting the orders from in that case? The senator that was...
Currently
that,
the senator.
Is that, I mean, who's in charge? Yeah. Okay, I was just curious because I wasn't...
I mean, there's the line of succession's probably kind of being figured out at the moment.
Yeah.
But at the moment, he gets word like everyone else. It's on a broadband channel.
Yeah.
Saying, hey, Clark is no longer with us.
Right.
And he has targeted Earth. We need help. At that point, the general realizes, okay, the guy I was following orders with has decided to no longer involve himself in the process. I don't have to follow his orders anymore.
And that makes sense. That makes sense. So I mean, that's probably more realistic, but I interpret it a different way. You know what I mean?
No. And I get where you're coming from. I just, maybe I'm for once being more optimistic than you are, which is kind of funny, but
really.
I don't think that one side or the other is wrong in this case. Now, with people who are dealing with like special ops at like Night Watch and stuff, and people who are really understand what's going on, and people who have a way to change things, that they've made a choice to follow a fascist. But the military is very, very different, because you swear an oath that you will follow the commander in chief. And if somebody starts violating that oath, we usually have a problem with it, because that means we're in trouble. So I'm hopeful that it's not the matter of they're bad and they're good in the storyline. It's a matter of this is how it would go.
Yeah. And to your point about the line of succession, Scott, they never really talk about a VP. It's very possible that they never got to that.
Well, yeah, I mean, without spoiling what comes next, this will come up.
Yeah, right. Right. And I know, but I just want to make a point that they may not have even, you know, replaced the VP. I mean, no one wants another Bingo Bob. So
that's very true. Or knowing Clark is a narcissist, he doesn't want anyone in that office that's going to be
right,
causing him any trouble. So I can see him appointing like the most, you know, boot licking piece of crap who doesn't do anything. And it's like, yes, daddy, I will want another. And so that's the person we have to deal with now, which again allows a senator to come in and basically do her own little coup at that point. Blake, what do you got?
Just thinking of all the comments I could make about the Bingo Bob reference, but I'm just going to let that one slide.
I'm in a rewatch of West Wing right now, and I finished right before we came on today. I finished Election Day Part 1, so I'm having feelings right now.
I was really surprised Scott didn't take the bait on that one, but you did, Blake. Nice job.
But I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
Okay.
I did want to comment, though, and Scott, you kind of touched on it with the commentary on the general, is the one thing consistently throughout Babylon 5 is no character is exactly as they seem. There are not black and whites. There is a lot of gray in this show, whether that be moral ambiguity, situational ambiguity, position. You know, there's all these things within the show that just don't have these defined black and white pieces. And when you've got the general talking about why he was sent out to command this fleet in the first place, this is not a rabid Clark supporter. This is a guy saying, we took an oath to support Earth no matter who's in charge, and you don't lead a coup against your government, period. And he even admits he admires Sheridan. Sheridan is someone he has admired as a former student, and his abilities and his tactical responsibilities, and almost seems, I don't want to say upset, but almost a sense of regret at what he has to do. But as someone who's following the orders of the commander-in-chief, that's what he's there to do. And then at the end, when he comes back in with the Apollo after they get control back of the ship, as Scott said, they've been monitoring what's going on. So they know Clark's put the gun to his head, and they know what's about to happen with the weapons platforms, and that the only way to really stop it is either the Agamemnon rams it, or they jump in and blow it out of the sky to begin with. So he jumps in as someone who's loyal to Earth, not necessarily the administration, but loyal to Earth, jumps in to stop that, and even says, you know, welcome home, John. You're going to have to probably answer a few questions before a tribunal about this one. So he's not letting Sheridan off the hook either. But he is acknowledging that the dynamic has changed with who's in charge at Earth.
And before we keep moving, we record this episode live with us. And so sometimes things come up. So Justin had to drop off for an illness. So when you don't hear Justin for the rest of the episode, that's why. He'll be back next week. So let's go over to Emily.
Okay, so I'm going to be super nitpicky here, because at least in the U.S. military, they don't swear an oath to the commander-in-chief. It's to our constitution.
But the constitution says who runs the military.
It says he is the commander-in-chief.
I will see your nitpick and raise you a nitpick.
But like, the primary thing is to the constitution and a legal document. And they're under the assumption that their commander-in-chief is going to give them orders that are legal.
Well, and here's the thing though.
And that creates like a weird situation, because I would say what Clark was doing would be probably violating a few different things. I don't know, like, Earth law at that point, but my guess is probably.
Yeah, but without getting us completely in trouble with us, for viewer fans, that hasn't stopped people before.
And I know, an issue.
And when that's the whole point with ISN, which we see here as well, too. People are being fed a narrative. Mars revolted. Clark put it down. That's not illegal. Babylon 5 revolted. Clark is trying to put it down. That's not illegal. The aliens are coming to take your jobs. I'm going to stop them. That's not illegal. So, of course, he's bad. But when I'm looking at this from a military point of view, I mean, yeah, would I agree with everything he's done? Absolutely not. But again, has he really violated the Constitution in the eyes of most people?
Didn't they tell him? Didn't Babylon 5 tell everybody that he assassinated the other president?
Yeah, the guys who are rebelling against him said that.
So he wasn't even technically. His position wasn't even legally obtained. So then he wasn't even.
I am 100% playing devil's advocate. Yeah. I don't think Clark is good. But if you look at it from the general's perspective and other folks' perspective, because there's tons of folks on those ships who are just trying to do their job.
Do I agree with Emily? And I'm not going to represent, you know, how you feel about it. I can clear you being devil's advocate. I don't want to misrepresent what you're saying, Scott. I'll leave that for you to do on a different argument. But, you know, there is also the other thing to leave, and that's to resign when the orders are so awful that you just can't do it. You know, that goes back to bombing civilians on Mars to put down a revolt. that goes back to bombing civilians in different contexts, which I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole, but everyone knows what I'm talking about. And there you do have the ability, you know, that general had the ability to say, you know what, this is too far, and I'm not going to go this far, and I'm going to resign. And he didn't do that. So he needs to be up in front of that tribunal just as much as Sheridan does, because he was complacent in what his view was on it, and he allowed it because he didn't stand up to it. Yes, you swear an oath to the Constitution, and I'm pretty sure the Constitution of anything that would be legitimate is going to respect its own people and not want civilians to be targeted, which is what Clark did over and over and over again. And of course, you know, him killing his own president goes down into that too. But as you point out, Scott, it's very legit for the opposition to have leaked that, which no one would believe in this day and age, let alone in 200-300 years.
And I recognize with a military person, it's probably harder to say this, but we assume people know the indiscriminate bombings of Proxima and Mars happened. Blake,
okay,
good
point.
Yeah, and that's exactly where I was about to go with that, because we heard several episodes ago when they first started engaging Earth ships, Sheridan even gave the order, target those who have engaged in illegal acts, and implied that there were other ships when they took Proxima, that there were other ships who had intentionally gone out of their way to avoid that. The example being, what was it, Mackie on his ship, who had intentionally not engaged in any illegal orders. And even Mackie said, we've not followed any of those orders. We've just sort of sat back. Now, I get your point about being complacent and allowing it, but I would also posit that there are people on these ships that don't know the full extent of what's happened, that they've not been told what's happened, or it's been framed as, we weren't bombing a civilian target, we were bombing a target of the Mars resistance. They just happen to be hiding with civilians. Not that we've heard that from individuals who have done questionable targeting.
Oh boy.
I'm not gonna go just you throwing can, that out there.
You can leave your comments below. Have fun.
Leave your comments below. Hi.
We will reply. We always do.
We always do. But you get where I'm going with that. It's this idea that it's very reasonable to think that people, even in the command structure, don't know the full extent of the orders Clark has given. Because we've also seen Clark has been willing to go outside the command structure. When he tried to seize Babylon 5, where did the orders go through? Because that's how they got tipped off, when the general called B5 and said, follow the chain of command. Orders weren't being issued through the chain of command. They were going through a political division. So it's reasonable to think that Clark was issuing orders through a political division to staunch loyalists that even the command structure doesn't fully realize what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not going to try to defend this general much more, but also, just being a general doesn't mean you're in the high echelons of command. He may have been the general in charge of Earth defense, and so he's been dealing with Earth stuff and not colony stuff. Now, again, probably heard about Mars, but my whole point in all this, and it goes back to what Blake has said, there's shades of gray in this. If this was a different type of show, they would be the mustache-twirling bad guys, and we go in and we blow them up. But this show goes a little farther than that. That's what I appreciate. Speaking of that, and going back to the one-word answer I got on Twitter, indiscriminate bombing of civilians is bad, right? How about sending innocent telepaths onto a ship to cause them to take over the ship and probably get killed? Is that bad or good? Question mark.
It saved lives. It saved a lot of lives.
But I could also say that if Mars Revolt had happened, and again, I'm a devil's advocate, if Mars Revolt had happened, a lot of people could have been killed. So let's go ahead and put that down. It saves a lot of lives.
Well, I would argue that the people that killed those telepaths are no longer in the universe, because they're unsavable. They said in this episode, well, we can't help those people without the resources of Earth, but no one's proven that they can help them at all. So my philosophy on the matter is they were already dead.
That makes it easier. Yeah, it's dehumanize somebody, it makes it a lot easier to kill them. Wow. Emily, what do you got?
That is one of the things I like about B5, because like the shadows had intended to use them as weapons, and then B5 gets a hold of them and they're like, well, they were already built as weapons, so we might as well use them. And it's like, but we can get them help on Earth. But can you? Like, you're saying that, but do you really know? Do you know for a fact if they survive whatever got unleashed, can they actually be helped, or are they still going to end up dead? And after all, everything that's been done to them, how human are they still? Yes, they still have their physical human forms, but how much of them is left to save? Like, I am not saying it's right, because it is very, it feels so icky. I'm just wondering how, if there's a person in there left to save, or if they've all just been turned into a weapon and there's none of them left.
Jesse.
It's kind of like saying, okay, you know, somebody killed somebody, so, but we can't prove it. So we're going to go in and we're going to plant some evidence and let that person, like, we're going to get that person because it's best for everybody, right? But there's fucking laws against that. And you can't just set somebody up because you think that they're guilty, but you can't really prove that they're guilty. That's kind of like the, oh, it was for the better. That mentality is like, right, it helped them win, but was it for the better of everybody, or was it just for the better of the people that were using them? Like, clearly it wasn't for the better of the telepaths, because that one fucking guy didn't even look human at the point where he was all like entangled in the fucking shadow stuff. Like, he was clearly, they woke up looking uncomfortable. Like, they woke up like they look like zombies. And so it was just, it was creepy, and it's unethical at least. So yes, I understand that they needed them to win, but they kind of did some dirty shit to get themselves there. So
we'll go one step further on this, because this is actually, we brought this up on Beyond the Rim several episodes ago, and we actually legitimately said we were going to ask the newbies this. Let's talk about Franklin for a moment. Franklin has taken a Hippocratic oath. Mm-hmm. So to Jesse's point on ethics, and we see Franklin tap dance around that oath in this episode. So Franklin literally took his patients and used them as weapons. So we have bashed on Franklin a lot in this show. Most of the time it's been warranted, but this is a time where Franklin literally violates the Hippocratic Oath. So how do we feel about this?
Well, but real quick, we do know that Franklin wasn't happy about this in any way, shape, or form. And the explanation given that we need Earth's resources to help these people comes from Franklin trying to justify it to random soldier on Mars number 7 who had a problem with it. I kind of read that situation as, I don't think Franklin thinks there's a prayer that they're going to recover these people either. I think he's selling it to himself as much as anything.
Yeah, that's what it felt like. It felt like he was trying to convince himself what he was doing was okay.
I like that they took that head on, you know, that JMS just absolutely took that head on with the writing and showed that he was very conflicted about it, but that he was justifying it to himself and to her, I suppose, but more so to himself. It was, yes, it's meant to feel kind of icky, because JMS, his biggest thing when he represents war is he's not going to make it a jingoistic, somebody's right, somebody's wrong. It's going to be gray, just like what you and Blake, Scott and Blake have been talking about in this episode. He's going to make it icky because war is awful and it's not going to be easy. That's for another show, but that's not going to be for JMS's writing.
Nicole.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Franklin was clearly conflicted about it and he didn't necessarily want to do it, but he knew that it was kind of the only way for them to kind of achieve what they wanted to do in the way they wanted to do it. And they were strategic about it. And I do think kind of justifying it to himself as well, but it's not the first time that we've seen on this show the sacrifice of a small amount to save a large amount. You know what I mean? This has happened multiple times throughout the show. And you know, like Kevin said, it isn't meant to feel good. It's meant to make you uncomfortable. And it just is a great example of, you know, the decisions and the conflicts that people have to sometimes face in order for the greater good. Well, yeah, I mean, it sucks that they did. But also, I think it was Jesse who said, like, what kind of quality of life do those poor people have, if any? You know what I mean? Because chances are that stuff is so entangled in their bodies that trying to get it out and trying to fix it is going to kill them. Like he said, you know, it's 30 people as opposed to hundreds and thousands or whatever the number was. I don't remember. So yes, it's a small sacrifice to pay and it is shitty, but also it was kind of a necessary evil in order to win the battle.
We're all debating the trolley car problem without naming the trolley car problem.
Exactly.
There you go. Emily.
Yeah. I do appreciate that JMS has shown how difficult it is because, yes, they're fighting war. So there are situations where there is no good choice. You're in a war. People are going to die. That is what happens. Like, there, you can't really get around it. You can try to avoid it as much as you want, but it's going to happen. And it made me think of when he was talking about Coventry and, like, having to let Morden go because it was a shit decision. Did he really want to send those telepaths and use them in that way? Probably not. But were they designed for essentially a similar purpose and were going to be used against them? I mean, desperate times call for desperate measures, I'm assuming. But I really do appreciate how it was written because, yeah, there are times in life where there isn't a good choice. You have choices, but none of them might be what you would normally do because of the situation.
Jesse?
It feels super icky. Like, I know everybody said it, but okay, it's only 30 people, right? But what if one of those 30 people were your mom?
Also, it's 30 people plus anyone else who was killed by them on that ship, on those ships.
Sure. And it's like saying, okay, take the death penalty, for example. You know, it's a small population of innocent people who get put to death. But, like, do you want to be that innocent person that gets put to death? No. Like, it feels icky. It's just an icky, icky thing. There's no good answer. Like Nicole said, you sacrifice 30 to save millions, right? Or you put yourself in that other situation where one of the people that were sacrificed were you. It sucks either way.
You know, and we've talked a lot about agency on this show. And let's just talk about the fact that those 30 telepaths had no agency in what happened to them. They didn't have any agency in what happened when the Psychor or whoever turned them over to the shadows to be turned into weapons. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, if we're going to pretend like Franklin is, that they are still human and theoretically maybe could possibly be recovered someday. Well, we didn't do that either. We put them into a super high risk situation where they were almost certainly going to get killed and they had no agency given to them by the quote unquote good guys either. So,
yeah. And Mike, I like how you said, you know, Franklin felt bad about it. I'm sure that will be a good defense when he goes in front of the medical review board on this. Mm-hmm. Although I do, after watching some stuff on medical review boards, they let a lot of stuff slide. So it may be fine, but.
And I guess I still don't know exactly what Franklin's role in it was versus what he, I mean, you know, you could claim he was just following orders too, because we know he got the call from Sheridan that he was not happy about. And he told somebody in the hallway he was going to have to go drink himself to sleep from now on. So
I mean, we've talked a little bit about how the pacing has sped up in this show. And we've talked about why. Going into writing this episode, JMS is thinking that the show is being canceled. So he has to tie up as many loose threads as he wants. But I really do appreciate that this piece has been played with for weeks. Mike, you mentioned the call. Prior to that, the episode before that, Sheridan's pushing and dogging him to figure out what happened with the telepaths and how can we get them to wake up or can we save them or whatever. So even though JMS has had to speed up his timeline, he didn't do so at the detriment of the story itself. He still planted those seeds like he's done throughout the show. And I think, honestly, a lesser showrunner would have just tapped the gas more and missed a lot of this stuff. But that's not what JMS is going to do.
I still love Dr. Franklin.
You always have. You always will.
I'm a stan.
Now that I've played devil's advocate for a while, I will tell you, I would like to think that I would have the courage to do exactly what these guys did to save a planet, which includes making these tough calls.
I do want to mention the senator in this episode, played by Carolyn Seymour. I mean, she's been all over the place in sci-fi, and she does a lot of voiceover work, particularly for video games. So you may not have recognized her potentially, but you've seen her or heard her quite often. She played a Romulan a couple of times on Star Trek, particularly on TNG, but she's got an IMDb a mile long. And it's a shame we didn't see more of her in this episode because she's a fantastic actress, but what we did see was good.
And she was really quick on the draw there.
Well, I mean, and to your point, Emily, I'm sure there's a lot of people in this kind of dictatorial government who are just waiting for that opening.
Oh, yeah.
That power vacuum to open. Exactly. And you just got hope like hell they're a decent one, but it's questionable.
We heard that back in season two when Sheridan was getting set up to figure out, okay, well, not getting set up, but he was placed at B5 to mm-hmm. figure out who is loyal to who. And we were told, we're laying the pieces here. As soon as we have an opening, we're going to take it. The problem is, if we move too fast, we will lose, and then it will get worse. So I can see this senator just biding her time. Now, again, she's probably complacent in a lot of bullshit to get to this point, but she has to wait for the proverbial trigger to get pulled.
And that also makes a really interesting topic of conversation is, how much do you collaborate because you need someone on the inside?
I mean, if you're the first person to stand up and say there's a problem, you're going to be the first one shot. What can you do when you've been shot? Hmm? What can you do?
Well, and don't we know that they already did that? Didn't they?
Yeah,
they stormed the parliament or whatever. And
yeah, he had his own. They even called it the Night of the Long Knives. They called it out in this in the show. So yeah, Nicole.
I just wanted to add one more thing about the battle. It was good to see our boy Garibaldi back in the mix. You know, working with Franklin and Lita. I was like, oh, there he is. There's Garibaldi. It made me happy that he wasn't being a dick anymore. And he's kind of back in the fold and they're working together. And I don't know. It's just the gang was all back together. It made me feel good.
One thing I love that came out of those Mars scenes is JMS is still prickly, whether it's now or 30 years ago. So he got into a little spat with a couple of people on the Usenets because they were arguing about gravity on Mars. And like, how does Garibaldi move so quick on Mars? And why is he wearing just an oxygen mask? And JMS in his normal self is like, well, it's been 175 years since we landed there. Probably have been doing some terraforming. And Garibaldi still weighs 75 pounds. So he's not going to bounce around like a ball. I just love watching JMS get pissy with people. Usually it's me, but you know, sometimes it's other people too. Kevin.
Yeah, they filmed that in March, but in the valley. So it was like 85 degrees that day. So they're wearing parkas and all that gear. It just sweating their asses off because it's hot as hell in a parka. But I think it was Richard Biggs that I saw talking about it. But he said he was able to handle a little better than the others because he was pretty fit.
I was about ready to say, we already know from other people's experiences that Jerry Doyle isn't exactly the nicest guy on a usual basis.
Yeah.
Can you imagine when he's pissy and hot?
No, I don't. I wouldn't prefer to, no.
Also, the Mars like land when they were walking around, it reminded me of Total Recall. Like, I was getting some Total Recall vibes. Yeah, basically. I was like, oh God, I hope their mask doesn't come off. Their eyes are going to pop out.
Get your ass to Mars.
See you with the pod director.
That movie is amazing. I'm gonna have to go watch it now.
You're welcome.
What, you don't like the reboot?
Well, okay, we're not gonna go down this rabbit hole. But
everybody, go get a drink, get comfortable. Stop.
Absolutely, the Paul Verhoeven Total Recall is a classic. But I will give the reboot quote unquote one thing. It actually follows the Total Recall story. From the novel, we will, I think the title of the novel is, I'm going to blank on it. It's a Philip K. Dick story. Total Recall with Arnold Schwarzenegger doesn't take that book at all and do anything with it. Because for one, in the book, he never goes to Mars. That doesn't happen. So when you got to take them as apples and oranges because they're just a different thing.
Yeah, I haven't seen the reboot.
That being said, I'll take Arnold any day over anybody else. So
yeah, and I don't know if the reboot has the woman with the three boobs in it or not.
You know what? Some of us in the late 80s had had a good time with that.
I'll never forget walking into the living room and there's this woman with three boobs on the TV. And I'm like, what the hell?
And your dad's just sitting there like this going, hello.
I was like, what are you watching? I'll never forget. And then, of course,
I wish I had three hands. You're doing fine with just two.
Yeah, it just, that part is sticks out to me, and the eyes bulging out of the head. Those are the two things I remember most. Again, about the movie.
Yes. Well, that was a fun train ride.
Speaking of rides, I made the mistake of watching that movie on a transatlantic flight.
Oh God!
Oh no! My
so the person behind you and the person next to you.
Just this past summer, and it never stopped feeling incredibly awkward.
Oh God!
Because besides the nudity, it's a very graphic movie.
It is
like way more than I remembered. Anyway, the Total Recall reboot was actually okay.
Let's go ahead and move into the other part of the conversation that I'm sure will be fun, and that is Ivanova and Marcus and the revelation that there is potentially something that could help our dear Commander Ivanova. Who wants to start?
I mean, no, I want to, but I was gonna let somebody else.
Jesse.
This would be a great chance for Jesse.
I just don't want to fight with Scott because I heard him say, I don't agree with you guys about Marcus. And I don't understand how, listen, he's a special soldier, right? Aren't the Rangers like highly trained?
They're going to be like, he's a special boy.
He's a special boy.
And the rest of us love it when you argue with Scott. So please go ahead.
Right? No, I don't. I don't, because it makes me want to punch him in his face.
I have a legitimate
That's gripe the best part.
People. I have a legitimate gripe with people who said he wouldn't have run away. And I'll tell you why. And it's not like I'm going to argue with you. It's the fact that we have been told since season two that this man has a death wish. And we talked about this in our Beyond the Rim last week. We hear him when he talks to Delenn about his brother and the fact that his brother was the one who bought into the Rangers. His brother was the one who signed up to bring peace to the universe. It was his brother who wanted to do all of this. And then his brother was killed. And so he stepped in because it was the only thing he could do to honor his brother. And that's why he joined the Rangers. He did not join the Rangers because of some kind of highfalutin idea of what the universe could be. He joined because his brother died and he doesn't have a reason to live. He flat out told. It was either Delenn or Lanier. I can't remember which one.
It was Lanier.
Thank you. So he flat out told him, I got nothing to live for. My brother wanted to do this. So here I am. So the fact that he jumps at the chance to save somebody else who he feels is much more important to him and much more important and impactful to the universe, that makes perfect sense to me. Not for a moment do I hesitate that he leaves and does that. That was my argument.
But yeah, he took the White Star.
He
took the White Star in the middle of a fucking battle.
There was no other way to, though. Those shuttles can't make it back to Babylon 5. I don't want to get too far into the weeds, but they can't make it. That was his only choice.
And even if they could, Kevin, they can't make it fast enough. She's been told that she's going to die soon.
Right.
So how is soon? A day or 7 days? They didn't tell us.
The last episode, I think they did. They said like within 3 or 4 days, I thought was what they said.
Right. And how many?
10 days.
Okay.
How many days did this battle last? Because it didn't seem like it was that long.
Okay, Ivanova, I have a way to save you, but hold on. Nicole?
I was going to say, I think kind of what you were saying, Scott, is that I think Marcus saw it as an opportunity. Well, not only was he in love with her, right? And he doesn't want her to die, but also maybe it was a way of kind of atoning for the loss of his brother.
Oh yeah.
And kind of this was his way of, you know, because he never got over that, right? And maybe this was his way of, if I save this person that I love more than myself, it's kind of an atonement as well. That's kind of what I kind of viewed it as. I mean, obviously the whole love story is, it tickles me and I'm a sucker for love, like I said, but I also think that there was another element to it. And I think that's exactly what the element is that like, he was atoning for the loss of his brother and helping the woman he loves and sacrificing himself for her because he feels like she's more valuable to be on Earth and has more to give than he does. He's just kind of been existing.
Emily.
I want to know how he got the information from B5 because I thought the jammers were already in place because they had gone through the Mars atmosphere.
Okay,
how did he get the info?
That was actually answered by JMS, and you can take this as, do you believe JMS or not? But jammers don't work in hyperspace. And when he was messaging back and forth with the B5 computer, they were still in hyperspace.
Okay. So it was just like once they were within the actual.
So when they were in normal space. Yeah. When they're in normal space at Mars and then Earth, there's a jammer. But while they're jumping between the two, which is where he was having that communication.
Right.
They're in hyperspace.
Okay. I was really wondering about that because it seemed kind of.
People asked the same question back in the 90s, and it was plot magic.
Thank you for answering that. That was bugging me.
You're welcome. Hi, Jesse. How are you?
Hi. So Marcus did what was good for one versus how many millions of people? Because who said, I need Marcus? Who was it? Sheridan that was like, I need Marcus, right?
Yeah.
So Marcus was part of this big plan, and Marcus was like, you know what? My girlfriend's dying, and I'm going to go kill myself. Peace out. Like it couldn't have waited 4 hours till it was over. No,
I don't disagree with you, Jesse, at all. But I don't think like a person who has a death wish.
Well, and not to mention if Marcus didn't survive the big battle, then no one go revive Bella.
When you're in that frame of mind, nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the way it is. Nothing else is going to matter to him other than the object of his affection and what he can do right then to fix it. And he's going to let everything else go.
Because mm-hmm. human believes, nature. Yeah, and because he believes that with all things being equal, if I survive or she survives, we are all better off with her breathing more than me. And so I think the love absolutely comes into it, 100%. But I truly think he's doing a math problem here.
I think it's very weird.
It's 100% selfish. 100%.
I just think it's weird because I understand that you guys, I understand what you're saying. It's not lost on me. I get it. But like, he's especially, I don't know, he's fucking special forces, dude. Mm-hmm. And it, like, he's a lovesick puppy over the billions and billions of dollars of training that they put into this guy. I don't know. It's just weird.
You know, Jesse, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I think it just comes down to how you read his character. You're reading his character as more, you know, a trained.
As a soldier.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And the way I read his character is, at the end of the day, he's a hurt individual dealing with a lot of trauma, and this is a way to atone. To Nicole's point, I think you said it best. This is a way to atone for what has happened in the universe.
Right. He's a little lost puppy.
Yeah, and I think there's an argument to be made there that that's not the best thing for the character, but for me personally, I think it's the arc makes sense to me. I will say there are other arcs in the show that don't make sense to me, and I will vent about those when we get to them. But I think this one makes sense to me.
Right.
Yeah. Is it something Robin Hood would do?
Somebody in tights.
Nicole, what do you got?
I was just going to say, you know, I ate that shit up, the love part. I was like, oh, he's in love with her. I was just, give me a spoon. I'm eating that shit up. I love it.
I came into tonight thinking that we were going to end up talking about the last 30 seconds of this episode way longer than the whole rest of it. So,
well, I think here's the thing, though, Mike. Our newbies are making an assumption here, which I'm not surprised because we also made an assumption about Ivanova last episode. We never saw what's the line in Marvel? If you don't see them buried, they ain't dead. We haven't seen Marcus die. We know that Marcus has made a decision to sacrifice himself.
Yeah, we haven't seen Ivanova live either, for that matter.
That's what I'm getting at. So, and now everyone's going to think we're gaslighting again because we do that. But
we haven't seen the hybrid entity that is Marcus Ivanova come to life in the next episode.
Marvanova!
And then Sheridan has to kill that entity in order to make the two whole again.
It turns out the alien device they were talking about was the thing that turned the one dude into a rubber monster, a rubber Power Rangers monster.
Yeah, but like, how big of an asshole does he look like if he doesn't save Ivanova? Like, you left the middle of a battle and you failed at saving her? You're a double loser.
That's the alternative universe, Jesse. He watches Franklin's his captain's log or whatever, gets there, and then he misses the log where Franklin said, I deactivated the machine to make sure that no one would be able to do this again.
So now you didn't save anybody and you died. Good job. Or and she died.
By Sheridan's orders, I tore it into 1,000 different pieces. Well, shit.
Right.
Kevin, what do you got?
So, you know, sacrifice definitely is a theme throughout this season and particularly this episode, because it isn't just Marcus who's willing to sacrifice himself in this episode. Sheridan also makes that choice himself, too, when he decides that he's got to ram that last platform and makes the decision. And I think it's interesting that Boxleitner talks about this, and he says, you know, that Sheridan is the pyrotechnic guy. He wants to go out in a big way, and he wants to blow something up in a big way. And I don't want to totally misrepresent what Boxleitner was saying here, but I think Boxleitner puts it a little simplistically. I think that Sheridan was willing to sacrifice himself and his ship for the cause, which was saving the entire Eastern Seaboard. He doesn't necessarily have a death wish, and he doesn't necessarily have to go out in a big way where everyone's going to speak his name for centuries, but he wants to do the right thing. And if it means that he's got to go to save a whole lot of people, he's going to do it. And it would make him a huge hypocrite if he didn't, because he was willing to sacrifice 30, you know, telepaths who may or may not have been beyond saving to have this end. So he would be a hypocrite if he wasn't willing to do it himself. And I just think that goes to his character and how good it is. But I'm not sure that I agree wholeheartedly with the actor in this case. I feel like it's more nuanced than what he was making it out to be.
Kevin, knowing that Bruce Boxleitner's favorite genre is Western, that quote makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
Black hats and white hats, man. Jesse.
I will say that this is the first episode in the entire series that I've actually thought that Sheridan was hot. It's the beard all day long.
You liking the scruff?
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All the scruffy. Yeah.
He looked good.
The beard did it. Yes. Yes.
Still annoying as hell, but he looked good.
Still annoying as hell.
He did. He did.
I'd bang him, but still annoying as hell.
Just don't talk, sir.
Yeah. You don't got to like someone to bang him, you know? Right. Just tell him to shut up.
just don't talk while we do it. It's okay. Yeah, just don't talk.
Basically.
Pretty much.
We've all said it to someone, okay?
I'm just envisioning the fanfic of Jesse walking up to Sheridan and just putting her finger up to his mouth and going, shh.
Don't speak. Just let this happen.
All right, that needs to be a meme now.
Don't ruin it. Shh.
Okay, I need that done as soon as humanly possible. Facebook, you go off and do that for us, okay? Do not stalk Jesse's Facebook to get the picture, though.
No, there are like two of our people that I'm friends with. So if either of them, other than you guys, if anybody gets my fucking picture, I can narrow it down to about 7 people. So
she will find you and she will hurt you. Nicole.
I just wanted to talk about ISN real quick.
Yes.
At the end, the ISN broadcast, the girl who, you know, came on the screen and she was crying and really emotional. And she was saying that for the last year, they've been imprisoned, interrogated. Some of them were killed. And that made me a little emotional, too, because, you know, working in media and someone who wanted to be a journalist and that is something that does happen. Journalists get captured and interrogated, tortured, killed all the time. I thought that was a really cool scene. I don't know how else to put it, but also very real. And you know, they were literally taken hostage and in the middle of a broadcast that they were shooting and cut them off. Right. And they haven't been able to really freely do the news, or I know that they had their own little network going on, or they were kind of controlling ISN. Right. Was it still ISN technically?
It was still called ISN.
Yeah, but it wasn't really ISN. Yeah. Yeah. So
it was Rupert Murdoch's ISN.
Yeah. So it was just a really cool thing to see, kind of a way to wrap up the show at the end. I thought it was really neat that the way they did that and they made note of what happened and what they went through and stuff like that. So I just kind of thought that was worth highlighting and talking about.
I also love that they went back and got the same actor who was there when it fell. That actor is Maggie Egan, and she is a friend of the pod.
Yay.
Yes, we have chatted.
I thought that was a great bit of acting that she did there. It was very impactful.
Yeah, it was really good for the brief time that she was on.
And I was going to say this about The Machine with Marcus and Ivanova too, but again, I really do appreciate these little details. JMS did not have to go back and get Maggie back on after being gone for 2 years. He could have had anyone else do it, but he went back and got that actor. JMS has told us about this alien capital punishment device 2 times in the show before it plays into this episode. We got it back when it was a one-off episode we didn't think ever would matter with the mom from Lost in Space. And then we got it again with Garibaldi, Sheridan, and Franklin. And now we've got it again. So JMS, he knows how to sprinkle this stuff around. And it goes back to when you do a rewatch for the first time, which I think all of you probably will do sooner or later, you're going to see a lot of stuff that you didn't think you cared about the first time around.
I do have a question.
Emily, please. It's called trust issues, whatever you're going to say. Go for it.
Okay. Go fuck yourself. So Delin sent Ivanova back to B5.
Yes.
To get care or whatever.
Basically hospice. Yeah.
And then they show Ivanova and Marcus, and it's the place is deserted. Who the hell was there? Shouldn't there? I mean, it looked like nothing was staffed. There was stuff everywhere. The place had been ransacked. So I was watching it is there any medical staff to actually check on her?
Is it actually good?
I was about to say, there's a guy laying on the ground.
Yeah, he knocked them all out.
There's a pile of bodies off screen.
Because Marcus lost his shit and went
No, it's ransacked because Marcus knew what he was looking for. He was looking for that machine, but he didn't know where it was.
So Marcus made the mess.
Yeah, so you're seeing, if you look at it, for one, to Kevin's point, there's a dude knocked out on the floor. Yeah. You see it.
Okay, I thought Couple I saw level. That and I was like, eh. It's been a really long day.
It's not that he went all ape shit on it. The boxes are pulled, the cabinets are opened. He was looking for that machine.
So he went in, knocked out the medical personnel who was watching over her and found the machine. Okay, that actually makes more sense, I guess.
But
no, I have a question about all the from last week's episode and where all the stuff in the tunnels came from, because that irritated the hell out of me. Like, people had been living down there. It looked like stuff had been left behind, like people are living in the tunnels that Psycor was monitoring. I don't know, just whatever.
I'll say what JMS said. They've been there for 175 years.
Seem weird. Like, people are going through and not cleaning shit out.
Well, I mean, have you seen my house?
I mean, I've seen mine, so.
Okay, let's go ahead and end our conversation there and move into our questions and predictions. For those who are joining us for the first time and you're still with us, hi. We're going to have our newbies ask any lingering questions they may have about the episode they just saw, and then give us any predictions of what they think will happen next. And let's go to Emily first. Questions and predictions.
Oh, me?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. This episode still doesn't feel like it's actually anything that happened. It still feels like it's something that happened in Sheridan's mind thanks to Psycor drugs. Like, the last two episodes, that's what it feels like.
JR is going to come out of the shower at the end of season four. Okay, I got it. Got it.
Yeah, that's all I got. Cause it's
been seriously, that's all you have?
It's been a really long day. I'm lucky I even got that much going on.
Okay, Jesse, do you have any questions or predictions for us?
No. Yes, I
do. God damn it.
No, I'm kidding. I do. I want to know why it was so easy for Sheridan to forgive Garibaldi. Because he gave him a big old piece of responsibility in this episode. And I'm like, listen, I get it. Like, again, like Emily, I have trust issues. I know that Psycor did all this. They've all confirmed it. It is what it is. But it was still him, and he still did it, and it's creepy to me. And then now Sheridan's just like, oh, hey, you gave away my dad, who they still have, yes? And you also got me caught and tortured for 17 days. But hey, here's all your responsibility. Go to Mars and win this fight for us. So I just want to know why it was so easy for him. And maybe you can answer that now.
We kind of discussed this a couple episodes ago, too. I wonder if it's easy or not. Because, yes, he has dealt with Lita. And he has dealt with Franklin. And I think Kevin made this point last week as well. Sheridan obviously knows he's running the op. So he's letting Garibaldi run the op. But I mean, we're still in wartime. What happens after wartime, we'll find out. But
yeah, but I mean, that, again, I guess that's just wartime or not. You've given this guy, you put a lot of trust in this guy who got you and your dad captured. So
what's your other option? You let him sit on the sideline and you potentially miss out on a chance to get things done?
You find somebody else to do it? There's more than five people in this show.
Budgets.
Like,
Budgets. We can't afford any more actors. I'm sorry.
So yeah. Okay. Well, that's a better answer than what I like needed. I don't have any other questions. I do have a prediction, and my prediction is neither Marcus nor Ivanova die. I predict that somebody runs in at the very last moment and saves them both. That's all I got.
I really do appreciate your proper use of grammar with the neither and nor.
Listen, do you know I used to use nor without neither?
Oh.
And I got my ass chewed by my boss because he's like, no, you have to have both. You can't have one or the other. So now I use both.
You have one of those bosses. I got it.
He doesn't know how to use the proper apostrophe on the outside of words.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like James, when you're talking about James.
Yeah, you've already got an S, so why do you do it again? Yeah.
Yeah, and so he'll put James apostrophe S. No, sir, it's just an outside apostrophe.
The big question is, does he use the Oxford comma, yes or no?
No, I do.
He's an asshole. He is a dirty, dirty rat.
I use the Oxford comma. He does not. He's constantly taking commas out of my sentences. You are
correct, and he is not correct.
You can take my Oxford comma. Never mind.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, you are a user of the Oxford comma?
Oh, yes, definitely.
You are also correct this one time. Excellent.
All right. Do you double space or not?
Oh,
No.
We are no longer using typewriters, my friends. We can get rid of the space, no. I promise.
I have taken the double space out because I feel like it just looks nicer.
Yes.
So. All the Gen Zers I work with yelled at me about my double spacing of several years ago. So
it's hard when it was ingrained in you for like how
agreed.
Okay. I work for AmeriCorps where the C is capitalized in AmeriCorps. I cannot type the word America without capitalizing the C. I physically cannot do it. I will just capital C. I'm like, shit, that's not right.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I worked at Groupon for 4 years, and I can't type the word group without adding on at the end of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. It's just muscle memory after a time. You're just like, yeah. I can't do it. Okay, Nicole, questions, predictions. Hi.
Hi. Questions. So what happens next? Like,
oh, are you fucking kidding me?
No, but like,
longest beyond the rim ever. No.
Okay, so what I mean is like, so Sheridan's going to Earth, right? So what's he going to do on Earth, I guess, is the question. Is he going to shake hands, kiss babies, or is he going to face a trial?
Smoke crack and shoot eagles.
Or smoke crack and worship Satan, whatever, man. I don't know. Also, is his dad going to get released since Clark is no longer in charge now? Is he going to be able to get his dad back or whatever? And then prediction wise, whereas I love what Jesse said, I hope Ivanova and Marcus do not die. I have a feeling that Marcus is going to die.
Yeah.
And Ivanova probably will recover, but never be the same. That's kind of what I predict. I don't know for sure, obviously, but as much as it breaks my heart, I don't think Marcus is going to pull through. And I think Franklin is going to get there too late. I think he's going to get there after it's too late to save him. And then prediction-wise, I don't think the shenanigans are fully over. Yes, the battle's over, but I feel like there might be an outlier somewhere, or there might be somebody who still wants to stir shit up, because we still have a couple more episodes left. So I feel like there might be a little bit more conflict that still needs to be resolved.
It's a whole nother season. So we have some more shit coming.
But they didn't know that at the time. They only, they thought it was,
well,
you know.
And to be clear, when JMS thought that the show was going to get canceled, it's not that he wrapped up every single plot line. He knew he had to finish the Earth story. So he had other stories in mind. And season 5 will elaborate on several of those. So it's not like it's a reboot of the show or anything. It's... he just had to get the Earth stuff done, because that was the, I mean, to Blake's point, it was the fourth act. He had to get that done.
Yeah.
But I think we can assume, I mean, the Shadow War ended very quickly at the beginning of this season, and we all thought that was going to drag out for forever.
Yeah.
So you can almost assume that if season 5 had come without the threat of cancelization, we probably would have the Earth storyline finished up here early in the season 5 and then do something else.
Yeah.
So,
did you just say cancelization?
Yes, he did.
I just make shit.
You are wrong, sir.
Stand in my wrongness.
Neither nor. It's you got
okay.
this.
If we have learned anything with our culture, we can make shit up word wise and it's fine.
Okay, I got something. Did anyone else find it hilarious when he said Niner? Because all I could think of was Tommy Boy.
Are you calling from a walkie-talkie? I get it.
See, this is the thing. This is how sick I am, though. When I hear the word Niner, I think Take Me Out to the Holosuite from Deep Space Nine.
Oh, gee.
Death to the opposition!
Yeah, no, I thought Tommy Boy.
I did, and I said it, and my husband goes, what? I'm like, Niner. Did I catch a Niner in there? What do you call him from a walkie-talkie?
And no one yet has brought up the code names that Garibaldi used on the radio.
Yes. They were hilarious. Hilarious.
So Sheridan is Snow White, right? And Garibaldi is Grumpy. What were the other ones?
Yeah.
Doc, Sleepy, and Sneezy.
Yeah. And the Wicked Queen. Wow. The Wicked Queen.
But I did love the fact that Garibaldi was Grumpy and Sheridan for some reason is Snow White. I don't understand. Nicole, I had a question on your last prediction. So when you're saying shenanigans will happen, are you specifically saying that there are people loyal to Clark regime that will still cause trouble?
I just feel like the Earth conflict isn't fully over yet. So I feel like there may be some more Earth shenanigans, but they'll be wrapped up before the end of the season.
You think there might be an Earth final conflict?
That actually isn't a bad show.
You shut up.
It's not.
Shut your mouth.
Interesting. And nobody has anything to say about the Soul Hunters on this either, huh? I'm just, okay.
What Does Soul Hunters?
That they weren't there?
I mean, that they come to collect great souls. So maybe Ivana was not that great after all.
Oh, there's no one there worth picking.
Oh, my.
Oh, there is a whole movie about this that's coming, folks.
Buttholes.
And it's... I already spoiled this back in season 1. Martin Sheen has a butthole on his head. We're going to discuss.
I'm going to wear my Show Me Your Butthole t-shirt for that episode.
You gotta watch it after your St. Patrick's Day party, though, right?
I don't. Ew. I don't have.
Moving on.
I don't actually have a show me your butthole shirt, but I feel like I need to get one though. I also have a question.
Yes. About your
what happened to Lorien?
He went away.
He went with the shadows and the Vorlons beyond the rim.
Can he come back?
Well, we can discuss that after you leave.
If he can save Sheridan, he can save Ivanova and Marcus.
Yeah, but okay, a couple things on that real quick. And Blake's like, fuck.
He's not the only one. He doesn't
go to sleep. It's tired of our bullshit.
Real quick.
No, I just didn't have time to have dinner before this. So please continue this fuckery.
Do you want me to go back to coloring? Because I can shut the fuck up.
No, this is actually a legitimate conversation. So real quick, Lorien had already said that he was weaker than he had been before, and he actually gave some of his life force for Sheridan. So I question how much more he could have stuck around anyway. But the key factor there was the shadows and the Vorlons were not going to go away without him kind of leading them across beyond the rim or whatever. So yeah, Lorien, for what we know, has moved on.
And what's Draw's replacement doing down at the...
fuck's sake. Where's Monkey Man Bartender while we're at it?
No shit. Yeah.
Monkey Man Bartender forever.
Right. What was Londo doing during this episode?
Draw's replacement is watching people getting it on in their quarters for cheap entertainment.
Yeah, exactly. Londo is down in the strip joint where he usually goes. Draw is watching everyone fuck. And Lorien is keeping the shadows and Vorlons happy in the afterlife.
Not trying to be an asshole, but couldn't Jakar have done what Garibaldi did? Yes, he could have.
Everyone could. Marcus could have strapped the poor guy he knocked out into the chair and said, fuck you, you're done.
Well,
that's
what
I'm saying. You said, who else is going to do it?
Well,
somebody else other than fucking the Jakar guy.
Jakar isn't aware of the machine.
Well, also, too, like, I think it was just they didn't want the aliens to get involved unless they were fired upon and to help clean up, basically.
Oh,
we are
definitely merging two conversations, because I'm pretty sure she's talking about Ivanova and you're talking about the battle.
Oh, I was talking about the battle.
Oh,
I'm
no.
talking about the battle where
Jesse has segued. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I knew where she was going. I knew where she was going.
I was talking about when you gave him a lot of fucking... You gave him a lot of responsibility in this whole goddamn war when somebody else could have done it. Why are you all looking at me like I'm look at Blake and Mike?
I just heard you say you gave him a lot of fucking.
Well, he does wear that robe, and we already know Jesse likes the robe.
Listen, he has abs. Okay, we're moving. You know what? Now
we're not allowing Sheridan to talk, but can Jakar talk?
Jakar can talk.
He's fine.
Yeah, he can talk. He's got a good voice, too.
He has, like, sultry bedroom voice.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Does he wear his pink panties? Can I go now, please?
Anyway.
Okay. That was special. We're going to go ahead and end it for our newbies there, and I know you're all thinking, please, thank you.
For all two of you that are still listening at this point.
If you're still listening at this point...
We're sorry.
No, in the chat, in the comment section, put shenanigans. If you've listened to this point... Just type shenanigans. I want to see how many people have listened. We're going to go ahead and let our newbies leave until next week. Next week, we will discuss the penultimate episode of season 4, Rising Star. Until then, our newbies will be heading out, and we'll be back after the credits to discuss these questions and predictions. This should be interesting. Until next week, I've been Scott, and with me has been...
Emily.
Blake.
Nicole.
Mike. Kevin.
I just have what... I'm just kidding. And Jesse.
Begone, newbies. Begone.
Toodles, poodles.
Good night.
Love you guys. Goodbye. Yeah.
Be gone.
Jesus fucking Christ. Where's Lorien? Are you kidding me?
I hate you all.
I didn't do it.
I know.
I'm sorry. Kind of.
Thank you for listening to Grey 17, a Babylon 5 podcast. You can find all the places to listen to and watch this podcast at anchor.fm/Grey17podcast or youtube.com/Grey17podcast. We want to hear from you, so join the conversation at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, or Patreon. Be sure to subscribe and leave a review where you are listening to or watching this podcast. Grey 17 is not affiliated with, and the podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by Warner Brothers or any other owners of the Babylon 5 copyright. All clips included in this podcast are the intellectual property of the respective copyright holders. They are included here for purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. The opening and closing themes are available from Falling Matter on YouTube.
And what's out there The rim.
And beyond that?
The truth.
Welcome back to Beyond the Rim. Again, this is a spoiler section, so if you have not watched past Endgame, or if you just don't remember what happens afterwards, this is where you should leave. If not, we'll dive into the five questions and predictions that our newbies have given us. This should be interesting. So, first question, guys. Are there any lingering concerns about Garibaldi? Is anyone going to have a problem with Garibaldi after what he did?
Yeah, I've already kind of talked about this in the previous episode. I feel like it was wrapped up too easily and that there's not enough questions about it. But you can explain that away by the fact that Lita gave him a full scan and gave him a clean bill of health. But I feel like that's just a little too easy. But there's going to be very few problems with or questions about Garibaldi until he starts drinking in season 5.
Okay. Moving right along. Oh, I haven't even shared my screen, but you guys know what the answers are.
You read them anyway, so.
What is Sheridan going to do on Earth? Will his dad be released?
Yes.
Yes.
We'll get a very heartwarming scene with his dad in the next episode.
And we'll find out his mom was never captured. But in terms of what Sheridan's going to do on Earth, we'll find out next episode. But he will kind of be put on the spot for his decisions that he made. And at the end of the day, he will resign his command and leave Earth Force, and Earth will think that's the end of it, because Earth's gonna be like, hey, we're gonna get some tech out of this and we're gonna join this alliance, and oh, by the way, Sheridan's gonna be the president. So, which I always love that he just kind of pulls that on the rug out from under Earth just at the very end there. I do note that when we do find out who the new president of Earth is, or at least the acting president, it's not the senator, it's somebody else. Going back to our line of succession, it's the Russian chick.
Yeah, because that's what Earth needs, is somebody from Russia running the place.
Yeah.
Well, they won in a landslide. So
yeah. Exactly. We had a legitimate election. What are you talking about? I feel I can say this without most of our fans hating me, although there's a couple of them who may. But I wouldn't mind if Putin took the Clark way out. Just going to say that. Yeah. Okay, moving right along to predictions. First prediction is JR is alive and he'll come out of the shower at the end of the episode.
I do love this. It's all going to be Bobby had a dream for the entire season. Wakes up in the shower.
Maggie shot God. Mr. Burns. I'm sorry, Emily. This is legitimately happening. I'm sorry. Neither Marcus nor Ivanova dies. Someone will show up at the nick of time.
Nope.
Sadly, no. We will lose Mr. Marcus.
Yes.
And then we lose Ivanova for reasons.
Let's actually, real quick here, for both the fans listening who know the story and for us, let's get our story straight here, guys. My thought and intention is we do not discuss Ivanova, Claudia Christian, departing the show again until we meet Lockley in season 5. So episode 1. Because she's not in Deconstruction of Falling Star. But that just may be for reasons, because, you know, Londo's not in Deconstruction of Falling Stars. He is for a moment, but whatever. So I think at this point, we play the assumption that Ivanova has survived. We will see her next episode. She is alive. She's thinking she probably should have boffed our good friend Marcus. And then we move into Deconstruction, and then we do not discuss Ivanova's departure with the newbies until season 5, when we get introduced to the replacement. Because I would like the Jesse not to kill me for at least one episode. All good on that?
Okay.
Sure.
Yep.
Of course, the answer, as you guys said, Marcus is going to die, which was Nicole's prediction. Marcus is going to die, and Ivanova will never be the same. You're correct, because she's not going to be around.
But the acting in that scene is spectacular.
Well, and in the character, I would agree with that she's not going to be the same, because we'll absolutely even see that it's Sleeping in the Light.
Yes.
This is a very different Ivanova we'll see at the end.
Yeah, General Ivanova still is tormented by Marcus's loss. Absolutely. Yeah. And then Nicole's final prediction, there are still Earth forces that are going to cause some shenanigans before the season's over. And the answer is no. The shenanigans are done with Earth.
But, well, I will give that partial credit for the premiere of season 5, because there is that one loyalist part that comes and tries to take out Sheridan.
If she hadn't said by the end of season 4, she would be fine. Yeah.
And it's not really Earth forces exactly. It's a splinter group. It's not really, you know, anything that's organized.
I will be interested to see how the newbies handle the next 2 episodes, because really, I mean, Rising Star is just a coda for what just happened. And Deconstruction of Falling Stars is an interesting episode. I think, again, we can probably discuss with the newbies when we get there why that episode is there. Actually, no, you know, let's not. Let's just pretend deconstruction was the plan all along. And then a year from now, well, actually 4 months from now, we can tell the members or the newbies what actually happened. So anything else, guys, on this episode before we show ourselves the airlock?
Please, can we throw ourselves out of it?
Please, anytime now. Yes. Okay.
Get in line.
Where's the PPG?
We'll be back here next week to discuss Rising Star. Until then, please be sure to click all the links. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Again, we are running the best episode of the season bracket on Twitter right now. So go there and vote. And click the like, subscribe, follow button on YouTube and on your podcast app of choice. And if you can, please, please, please leave a review. It absolutely does help us. And I forgot to mention at the top of the hour, thank you to our Patreon members, especially to our Grey Council members who are listed as producers down below. Until next week, I have been Scott, and with me has been
Blake,
Mike, and Kevin.
And see ya. Bye.
Yay.
This is Grubbit of Snow White. I've got the coordinates for the Wicked Queen's castle. We are in position. You can break the mirror anytime you want. Stand by to receive.